go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bullen.
Hey, Ben. Today we've got a topic that I think it's car related.
Yeah.
Definitely car related. But this is like kind of a cool tool thing, too. I think it's got, you know, people who are interested in machinery and breaking things. And this is going to be kind of a mix of all things, I think. This is a fun topic for me.
Yes.
I don't know how to describe this any better than that. I mean, that's a terrible way to lead into this, but this tool or this device is actually a lifesaver.
Yes, and if we could steal a musical cue from the classic Steven Spielberg shark movie, then maybe we would give people a hint about the title of this podcast if they hadn't read it. But we're talking about Jaws, not Jaws the shark. Let's get rid of the confusion. We're talking about the jaws of life.
Yeah, and that was a poor introduction on my part, I guess, because tearing things apart—that's one aspect of this. But really, it's about life saving. It's about
and
the reason it's called Jaws of Life is because it snatches people back from the jaws of death. That's it's a dramatic way to say it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It is, but that's what it does, really.
Yes, and this is something that I imagine most people, at least in the United States, are familiar with. You hear reports of accidents, or you see the nightly news, and someone talks about an incident in traffic where someone was a driver or a passenger was pinned in their vehicle due to the way the crash occurred, and you hear the phrase "jaws of life." Firefighters, EMT, or not EMTs, but firefighters and other rescue personnel extricated the victim.
That's the term I was waiting for there, extricated. Now, that means that implies that someone is trapped.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is, it's a serious accident. You're talking, even modern cars with airbags, people still become entrapped in vehicles.
Sure.
Metal bends, pinching people in place or just simply, they're in a position they can't move. They can't get out of the car. It's very dangerous. Need something quickly to help them get out of the way, out of harm's way. And this is something that, Ben, can I go back to the history of this thing?
Because the history is fascinating.
I had no idea that this went back this far. Uh-huh. Now the Jaws of Life are actually a trademark name, and that goes back to – it's actually trademarked by the company Hearst.
Yeah, Hearst Performance Products.
Exactly, and I think a lot of people are going to know the name Hearst, or they'll recognize it instantly. Mm-hmm. That's the shifter company.
Yes.
It's a company that in the, like 1950s, I think.
50s, 60s,
began
yeah.
manufacturing shifters for performance vehicles.
And these shifters were so popular, became so popular, that auto manufacturers began putting Hearst shifters in their cars in the factory.
Yeah, exactly. And then they came out with, Hearst special editions.
Mm-hmm.
And you still see the Hearst shifter sign on a lot of people. They'll throw the sticker in the back window that says a Hearst shifter equipped vehicle or whatever. They were, they would have special packages in some of these, muscle cars even.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was an upgrade from what was considered standard equipment.
Right.
So this is a much better shifter. Again, founded in 1958 by George Hearst, in Pennsylvania. The company, it's gone through some sales here. We'll talk about that in a while, who owns Hearst and all that later. But it goes all the way back to the 1970s, Ben, the Jaws of Life.
Yes, because we commonly consider George Hearst of Hearst Performance the father of the hydraulic rescue tool, which is the unfun way to say Jaws of Life. We should keep in mind that Jaws of Life is a brand name. Mm-hmm. It's like saying Xerox,
Yeah.
It's like saying Ford.
It's Kleenex or something like that.
Right.
Jell-O.
Yeah, it's trademarked.
Yeah,
the point. And what it actually is mechanically is a hydraulic rescue tool. What it is marketing-wise is Jaws of Life. So here we are. What was it, 1970s? Late 60s, early 70s?
Early 70s. And of course, Hearst being involved in racing, they're around these small racetracks. A lot of bad accidents happen. These small dirt tracks or small asphalt
Ooh.
Tracks that are, all over the United States. Everywhere, all over the world now. But they realized that there's a definite need to equip, you know, some of these rescue vehicles with something to cut metal a lot simpler than bringing out, you know, a great big hacksaw.
Yeah, especially if time is ticking on an injury or the, from what I understand, the roll bars posed a heck of a problem.
Yeah, yeah. See, there's a, yeah, you have to be able to get through the roll bars. And those are extremely strong. You know, of course, the accident occasionally would crumple that.
Mm-hmm.
It does protect the driver, but it would make, you know, cause a situation where the driver's pinched or whatever. And like you said, the time's ticking. Sometimes in these accidents, I don't know if you've been to small racetracks, but a lot of times there's a fuel cell small fire type situation going
right.
on. It's like, we got to get the driver out quickly, mm-hmm. or they've got to be able to get out themselves. If they're pinched or trapped, they need to be able to get out quick, and to get to them and be able to do that quickly. Hearst actually developed something that was called the Hearst Rescue System.
Oh.
And they patented this. This is from 1972 to 1974.
Uh-huh.
And it was based on the AMC Gremlin. So you can imagine, you know, the size of this little vehicle.
Yeah.
But what it did was it was a hatchback vehicle. It was marketed as the highway safety vehicle, which was later sold outside of racetracks, but initially sold at racetracks only, and used at racetracks to kind of promote this thing. But that was the initial use of the Jaws of Life system, because it was incorporated in this, this Hearst rescue system in the early 1970s.
And we should point out, not to step on your toes,
mm-hmm.
right? We should point out that yet again, this is a piece of innovative technology, safety technology, mm-hmm. that comes to us directly from racing.
Yep.
And this thing got a lot smaller
Very
as it went
point.
On, right?
Very good point. Yeah, it did. Now it took the balance of the AMC Gremlin to use this whole thing.
Right,
it was a gas operated system. You know, it had a huge gas generator that powered this thing. A simple hydraulic system, and you know, we'll talk about what it actually does in a minute. But this vehicle, of course, was a hatchback, so it was easy to get in and out of.
Right.
It's a small, you know, relative. I'm going to say quick, but it was quick to get to the scene. Versus a great big heavy rescue truck.
Sure, good point.
So it could quickly get to the scene. You know, of course, it's equipped with this rescue tool, which they called the Hearst Rescue Tool at the time. That was the Jaws of Life.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have it, you know, called that at that point. It had, you know, of course, they had a stretcher, they had first aid supplies, they had a winch, they had firefighting supplies,
mm-hmm.
Push bumpers on the thing. They had a great big water tank. I think it was like a 25-gallon water tank in the Gremlin. So that's a lot to put in a Gremlin, really.
That's
think
a
about
big
it.
Amount of stuff.
And the whole thing, the entire package, cost about $11,000 to $13,000 total. So you could buy the vehicle equipped with the, you know, the Hearst rescue system, all of the equipment that I just mentioned, for about $11,000 to $13,000, and a lot of racetracks were doing it. They said, this is a good purchase. I want to make sure that my drivers on, you know, Friday and Saturday night are safe.
And then, you know, a good idea rarely goes unnoticed,
mm-hmm.
you know, regardless what industry you're in. Then other people start to think, why should we keep something like this on racetracks? Sure, accidents happen on racetracks, but that doesn't mean the accidents don't happen anywhere else.
Exactly. Yeah. So highway patrol system, you know, services, mm-hmm. and
fire rescues,
you know, other, I guess safety services decided it was a good idea to purchase a Hearst, what they call it, a Hearst rescue system, which is this AMC Gremlin vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find photos of this online, see what it looked like, you know, the original system. But, again, a fully equipped system was only $11,000 to $13,000, and I think it was a good purchase because, you know, other than it was extremely slow to get somebody out of a scene where they were trapped.
Right, yeah.
Pinned underneath the wheel or something like that.
And when we what we should do at that point is go toward the present, right, and talk about this, what the Jaws of Life system actually is, because now, of course, with any invention, we have somebody who starts the basis of it. We have other people who come later, who innovate, who mm-hmm. tweak the invention. And that is why nowadays the Jaws of Life that with which we're most familiar is much smaller. It's not the size of a Gremlin.
Sure.
So it's one of the people, F.M. Brick or Mike Brick, helped develop this tool, make it more user friendly. So I just want to put his name in there so that listeners don't think we completely neglected him.
Exactly. Now this is the whole thing is basically just a hydraulic Or in some cases, we'll find out pneumatic system.
Yes.
The hydraulics are the biggest part of this thing, though. I think that's the that's kind of the history of the Jaws of Life.
Right.
Now, you know, hydraulics are pretty simple. I don't know if we need to go into hydraulics at this point, but you know, it's just a way to use fluid to transmit force. Let's just leave it at that.
That's a really really good way to say it. Hey.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. So, and I'll leave it at this too. I read somewhere that it's basically. It's been called an unsophisticated hydraulic machinery. That's it.
Yeah.
And so unsophisticated hydraulic machine is not a very flattering way to describe something. But if you think about what this is needed for and the situations that it's mm-hmm. necessarily used in, I think that that's probably the best way to, you know, best type of tool to have, something that's uncomplicated, very easy to use in the scene, in the dark, maybe, you know, with the threat of a fire looming,
sure.
With you know, other vehicles passing nearby, a lot of concerns, you know, in these emergency scenes happening, you know, outside of the scene itself. There's surrounding factors that are dangerous as well.
And this all goes back to one of our favorite soapboxes, or maybe just one of my favorite soapboxes, that simple beats complex.
Yeah, and it's just – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say some of the simple stuff we should talk about here. If you think about all the things that a Jaws of Life system could do, then it would seem complex were it not modular.
Mm-hmm.
So these tools, if you have a Jaws of Life system, you don't necessarily have all of the same tools. There are three, let's call them rough divisions of tools, right?
Sure.
Okay, so we've got the cutters, and those are the things that can use the pump's power to cut through metal.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the spreaders, which can use the power of the pneumatic or hydraulic pump to make partitions, I guess, or to sort of pull a Moses at the Red Sea.
Sure, got it.
And maybe that's a little unnecessary.
What do they call it? A spreader? Is that what they call it?
A spreader, yes.
Okay.
It's a spreader.
And then there's also, what, rams?
Yes, rams.
Okay, and rams are more like a bar. It's just what it does. I mean, it sounds like what it does. Put a ram bar in between something, and maybe you can lift a steering column off of somebody that's pinned beneath, or mm-hmm. Maybe you can prop up the roof support, or you know, whatever happens to be pinching. If there's a place to support it on the opposite side, that's probably what you need is a ram. And then there's other uses for that as well. I mean, there's special tools. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of different things. There's some pneumatic tools that I want to mention in a minute too.
Yeah.
Ben, one quick thing here. I gotta get this off my chest.
And
I don't want to forget it because you know, we talked about the history, and I promise we'll get back into the tools because that's where we're going right now. But you know, when you go back and look at the Hearst history and where they are now, like who owns them and where they've come from.
Yeah. Don't forget this. Do it now.
I'm finding this really interesting because we talked about AMC not long ago, right?
Yes.
Okay. AMC, didn't they have a? They were. Part and you have to forgive me for not remembering this off the top of my head, but Kelvinator was part of AMC, right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, that's a kitchen appliance
company, yeah, small appliances.
Here is another case where an appliance company and automotive companies come together. I mean, or at least automotive related, because you know Hearst being a shifter company.
Yeah.
Now, in 1970, Hearst was bought out by Sunbeam Products, which is a small appliance company.
Huh.
What is the deal with these small appliance companies and automotive companies or automotive products? It's got to be a similar. We've talked about this. It's got to be a similar process in manufacturing or something. Just the mechanical aspect of it.
Yeah, we talked about this off air previously, like last week, I think. And one thing that's so interesting about this, because I didn't notice it until you pointed it out, but we would love to hear listener input on this. What is the strange relationship that small appliance companies and auto parts manufacturers seem to have? Is it a mode of production of some sort? Do the factories have some sort of, I don't know, overlap in production?
It seems like it's, you know, if the more you think about it, the more logical it is, and that they can produce, you know, automotive parts just as easily as they could parts for a can opener.
Sure.
Larger scale, maybe more of them. I don't know what, you know, the differences exactly would be, but it does, in a way, it makes sense. But anyways, I got that off my chest. Anyways,
yeah,
I needed
we'd like
to say
to hear
it.
About
so,
that.
So Sunbeam Products purchased Hearst in 1970. Here's another quick thing before we go into the next person who purchased it. Both founders of the company, George Hearst and Lawrence Greenwald, Griswold. That's from the National Lampoon. Greenwald. They both died in 1986, which I thought was kind of strange. I mean, here's a company that's founded in 1958. These guys are, you know, older gentlemen, but both died the same year, 1986. 1 year later, it was sold by Sunbeam and purchased by the Mr. Gasket Company. I think a lot of people are going to recognize Mr. Gasket.
Wow, yeah.
And then in 2007, so 10 years later, B&M Racing and Performance Products bought the Hearst brand. So as far as I know, mm-hmm. right now, B&M Racing Performance Products owns the Hearst brand. And I don't know how that all breaks down into the Jaws of Life, but I know that the Jaws of Life is a Hearst product. So
yeah,
you have to kind of dig into that yourself.
And the Jaws of Life itself has been, I think it's fair to say that the for the company, the Jaws of Life is as successful as the Hearst Shifter.
I mean, you know, I think so. I mean, here's a product that's been around for like 40 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
It saved thousands of lives. I doubt if there's a person in the audience who, when we said Jaws of Life, didn't know what we were talking about.
Right. Nobody thought it was the sequel to Jaws.
No, I don't really think so. And they've even ventured out even, again, 40-year history. They're very popular, but, you know, they're always innovating. They've got some new things. Because in 2005, there have been some a product called Vetter Pneumatic. And Vetter, I think, was another company maybe that did something that, you know, improved on a design. It's basically an airbag. Mm. And you could wedge these airbags into, you know, into a crevice, like maybe a boulder or something that, you know, is laying on top of another boulder or
laying
on top of somebody maybe.
Yeah.
And you can inflate these things. And these lift a tremendous amount of weight. And they can lift up to 93 tons, as a matter of fact. Now, that's how heavy we're talking about. So they're talking about like an airbag that collapses down really, really fine, really thin.
Yeah.
Almost has an appearance like a car tire.
Oh, okay.
It has
okay.
a tread pattern on it, like a rubber, like a non-slip pattern. It's you know, of course, reinforced. It's rubber with, I think it's called Aramide is the name of the product that reinforces this thing.
Mm-hmm.
93 tons of weight can be lifted. So it's much stronger than other bags of its sort. This is the Vetter company. Less than an inch, and it can be stacked with other bags, so you can multiply that by adding them on top of one another, getting a higher, higher lift out of this thing. Takes about only like a minute to set this thing up, so it's really
wow.
quick. There's about like 15 or 20 different sizes of this thing.
Uh-huh.
So you can, you know, in different shapes too, like wedge shapes. So again, you know, they're always innovating. There was also, in 2006, Airshore. Airshore International is another company, and Airshore is the one that makes the struts that we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
The Rams.
The Rams. Guess,
yeah, the Rams. And obviously they're pneumatic,
mm-hmm.
Airshore.
Yeah.
But they can be used to stabilize, like maybe if a, you know, work crew is digging a pit, mm-hmm. and the pit caves in, and they shore it up with you know, some type of, it could be even wood or whatever, steel on the sidewalls. An Airshore device can be used to prop that those two walls apart so that they don't further cave in.
Yeah.
To prevent things like that from happening. But it can be used just to stabilize mm-hmm. A vehicle that's maybe ready to tip over. Like let's say that you're trying to extricate someone from an accident and it's ready to tip one way or the other because of an embankment.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be really bad if, you know, someone is in the vehicle and it continued to tip, you know, roll over.
Yeah, no kidding.
They can use the Airshore strut to keep that in place.
And that's, as you said, pneumatic. I don't think we did it, so we should make sure we do so now. Scott, the difference between a pneumatic and a hydraulic system, of course, is that a pneumatic system is using air, whereas a hydraulic system is using fluid. Now, we just wanted to get that out there and make sure that we separate those.
Yeah, and you know, one other thing that we need to say about this this tool, and we got actually a few more things, but the hydraulics that this thing uses, it uses a pretty simple oil. It's a synthetic oil that it uses.
Yeah, yeah, incompressible fluid.
Yeah, exactly. It has to be incompressible, otherwise, you know, this wouldn't all work out. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has to be it's a phosphate ester fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, a synthetic fluid. It's non-flammable.
Yeah.
And, it's also non-electrically conductive. So
mm-hmm.
that means that, you know, they can work without fear of having this thing, you know, suddenly jolt somebody or catch on fire. If there's a leak, I can imagine if there's a leak in the line and there's a fire somewhere nearby.
Oh, yeah.
This would just make things far worse, you know. So you gotta make sure that, you know, that's good thinking.
I think so. Yeah, and that's. I mean, clearly, that's why you would use it over regular oil.
You ever work with a hydraulic machine?
Yeah.
How many times did that machine have a leak in, you know, in it somewhere?
Yeah, and how tough is it to find that leak?
It happens. Yeah. It does happen, and you know, it seems like, you know, occasionally there's a hose that has a problem. I'm not saying that, you know, the system has that kind of problem. I'm just saying that, you know, using it for heavy, you know, moving, like say I used it at a landscaping company, and it seemed like there was always a leaky line somewhere. So it's a wise move to make this stuff non-flammable.
Yeah, no kidding. And it's a wise move, again, to keep the operation of the machine itself simple. Mm-hmm. So if you check out our article on hydraulic engines and you check out our article on the jaws of life, you'll see some cool illustrations that will maybe explain what we're about to say. Like, here's how the jaws of life works. There's a portable engine, and it pumps this fluid that we mentioned earlier, this phosphate ester fluid, into a piston cylinder through one of two hose ports. So usually there's about a quart of fluid in here, but this can change depending on the model.
That's not a lot.
That's not a lot. That's less than I thought there would be. And here's where the operator comes in. There's a valve switch, and this switch controls which port the fluid enters. So if it enters one port, for example, the fluid would push the rod up, and that would open the arms of the spreader, for instance.
Okay.
And then if they toggle the switch and cause the rod to extract, it will close those arms.
Here, just as we said, it's very, very simple operation. It's like an on-off toggle switch, really.
Yeah.
I don't know how much easier it can be than that. And that's exactly what they're going for. They don't want to have a system where, you know, you have to push this button at the same time as the operator, you know, gives it more gas back at the generator and does, you know, you have to jump on one, you know, one leg while you cut this. Just make it really, really simple and very, very straightforward and simple, you know, as easy as possible to use, and you're going to be able to do the job quickly and save somebody's life.
And when we're talking about this, it is always important to remember that we are talking about human lives. And I want to make sure that that we make clear, while the operation of the machine may be simple, the disposition and the experience and the knowledge of the operators, that's really the deciding factor.
Oh, absolutely, Ben. You know what? There's a training course that goes along with this, of course. You have to be trained. It's not very easy to do, obviously. It's something that, you know, you do need to have training. You can't just pick it up and expect to operate correctly.
I have a great joke about it.
I want to mention one thing here. This is really, really cool. I thought this was so neat. The crash recovery system.
Yes.
And it's something that Hearst offers. And you've got your notes in front of you.
Yeah, I'm sorry I was yelling.
But if you want to go ahead and cover it, go ahead.
Well, let's both do it.
The crash recovery system is a mobile vehicle identification database. So when they approach a scene, they know it's a, 94 Honda Accord.
Sure.
How would you ever know where the airbag, you know, the lines for the airbag go from that? And if the airbags haven't deployed yet and you clip one of those, there's a chance that could activate.
Yeah.
So you want to be sure that, you know, you get their people out of the way before that happens, or if that happens. You also want to make sure that you're not clipping fuel lines. You want to make sure that, you know, that you're bracing using a you know, the right support area, something that's not going to just give way and cause more trouble.
Yeah.
So, you know, this database system, it gives them basically service information.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them vehicle service information that tells them, here's a good bracing point. Mm-hmm. Here's a good point. Here's a good cut point for the A pillar.
Here's
or the
what
B pillar.
To avoid.
Exactly. Yeah. If you need to cut the hood off of this vehicle, here's what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And here are your cut points. And if you can't make that, then here's, you know, an alternate. And it's very, very clear, very concise about what to do, you know, how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that just alone, the crash recovery system, I'm sure, has saved lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a great tool to have. I mean, how else would anybody know everything about every vehicle that's involved in an accident? I mean, what if they approach a semi that's, you know, rolled over on its side and there's somebody trapped in that? You wouldn't know what to do if there's a Peterbilt truck versus a, you know, you're used to working on Honda Accords or Civics or whatever, and suddenly, you know, you're out on the highway and there's, you know, other vehicles, you know, domestic imports. It gives you everything.
And as we said, the clock is ticking.
Exactly.
Okay, so when I thought about the operators and the people in fire and rescue and law enforcement who are risking their own lives at times to save other people's lives, and the amount of training that they have and the experience that they have with this, it reminded me of an old tech joke, an old Georgia Tech joke.
Oh,
can I tell it to you?
Please do.
Okay. All right. So this there's this engineer who works at a giant factory, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he retires. And then something breaks in the factory. And try as they can, the factory owners can't figure out what it is. So they contact this engineer and they say, please, you know, can you come back and help us? And he says, yeah, okay. So he comes back and he's walking through the factory. He goes into the depths and the bowels of the machinery. And then he walks back out and he says, I've got it. I need one of these cogs, you know, like a number four cog or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, what? That's it? That's all we need? And he goes, yeah. And so he goes and he fixes it and he puts a cog and he gives him the invoice. And the invoice is for like $100,000.35. And the 35 cents, you've heard this, the 35 cents is the cost of the cog.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing where to put it is $100,000. And that's what makes me think about the training that these professionals have to have, because no matter how foolproof the mechanical aspect of the tool is, and no matter how well the machine works, in this case, it really goes down to the operator's knowledge.
Yeah, you need to put it in the hands of a professional is what you have to do. And the people that operate these tools definitely are professionals.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, there's all different ways to power this thing.
Yes.
There's, of course, there's gas units, you know, like generator type units that can operate. And they even have power units that have, you know, up to 8 rescue ports. They can use 8 tools at the same time, which is incredible to me. I mean, it's called the Octoflow, and it allows 8 units, 8 rescue tools to be hooked up at the same time. There's a lot of accessories.
Mm-hmm.
There are hoses, attachments, extensions, platforms, supports, other fluids, of course, you know, you can use replacement fluids. And one thing, you know, that they're really proud of, I guess, on their site is that they now offer a line of battery powered tools.
You can
charge up, and these are incredibly modular tools that, you know, incredibly what am I looking for here, Ben? Like able
versatile.
To carry them on this versatile and I don't know, easy to carry.
Easy to carry.
I'll come up with it later. But they're called the e-drolic tools.
Yes.
So they're still hydraulic tools, but they're battery operated.
Mm-hmm.
Again, freedom of movement, you know, any situation, so they can get down to, you know, somewhere that maybe they couldn't bring a full generator down to, if they're working on like maybe a hillside, a steep hillside, perfect opportunity. Oh, also, Ben, there's even some hand pump tools, which I think is a great idea. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know how, I mean, hydraulic force, you can use hydraulic force, the way it multiplies,
right.
You're able to do a lot more with hydraulics than you think you can. So these hand operated pumps, I'm sure it's much less than if you had it, you know, a gas, you know, generator operating
sure.
the thing. But the hand pump tools, again, for smaller jobs, that's a great tool to have. These are really heavy duty things too. I mean, we're talking like, I mean, they're up to like 20, the heavy duty tools can have like 25 to 30,000 pounds of force behind them.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that.
And I think typical would be like maybe like 5,000 PSI or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we're getting up to like 25 to 30,000
mm-hmm.
pounds of force. That's amazing.
And yeah, just for some specifics, the Jaws of Life ML40 model, it's got a cutter. This gives you 12,358 pounds of force at the center of the blade, and at the notch it gives you 22,400.
Have you ever seen one of these things operate?
Not in real life, only on television or video.
Same here. I've seen a demonstration of it on video, and it's incredible. And it's just like it's literally like watching a can opener go through a can. It's that easy.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it has to be used in the proper way with the proper handling. And I think maybe now would be a good time to mention the people that have actually saved lives using this. There's a kind of an award that they can apply for.
An award you told us about.
Yeah, I mentioned this. I, in my reading, I found something called the Green Cross. And you may see a green cross on, you know, advanced rescue or, you know, some type of life support machinery that you may see around your town. And the green cross, it looks like, you know, the Red Cross, how it has the, you know, the bold cross in red with a circle around it. This is the same thing, only green. But it's a symbol of recognition for anybody who's used the Hearst Jaws of Life, you know, the specific tool, to save a life, you know, from somebody who's been trapped or, you know, somebody who's been, you know, in a bad situation on the road. So, again, thousands of these have been awarded, but you have to, if you're an operator who wants to apply for the Green Cross, you have to go to the Hearst website, enter all the information, you know, whether that's a report number or what, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But all the details of the accident, it'll be investigated, it'll be, you know, it'll be researched and make sure that, you know, you're not just trying to get a green cross for no reason.
They do verify.
They verify, yeah, that's right. But there have been literally thousands of these that have been given out, and I don't know, the official Green Cross registry is growing every day. So, you know, this thing is – it's a valuable, valuable tool.
And you can take classes to learn how to work one yourself. You can easily contact the Hearst Jaws of Life course that's in Shelby, North Carolina. You can also contact your local law enforcement or fire office, excuse me, fire office, fire department, pardon me, gentlemen, and ask them some questions about where they found it. This is one of those machines that I'm going to go ahead and make a call on. It's probably going to be around and in for decades, and it's probably not going to change that much. The size might change.
You know, as simple as it is, and the function that it performs, I think you're right. I don't see it changing a whole lot between now and then. I mean, they've already gone to battery operated, but hydraulics have to remain because that's where you get the strength.
Yeah.
I just think that they've maybe made this thing, and again, I wasn't trying to be unflattering when I said that it's unsophisticated. That's actually flattering. That, you know.
Yeah.
They've made it as simple as possible to use, and they've got it, you know, they put it in the hands of professionals that know how to use it. This is a great tool.
It's an advantage. So, if you drive a car anywhere in the United States, be very glad. I'm certainly glad that the Jaws of Life are around.
Yeah, and I hope you never have to use it. I've never been around, again, I've never seen it in person, which I'm thankful for. I've seen video of it happening, but I hope to never see it in person because that means I'm either involved in or near something like that, something tragic, or potentially tragic.
Yeah.
Hopefully with this tool, you know, that will that'll keep some of that from happening.
And, you know, I'd like to hear from some people who have had experience with the Jaws of Life. We want to hear what your take on it is. We want to hear, especially if you are a professional who has worked with the Jaws of Life, some of your experience with it. All right, Scott, this one comes to us via Facebook and our friend Joel. Joel says, love listening to the podcast. Wondering if you might be interested in dispelling some myths and mysteries about the Chevrolet Corvair. And he's got a short list of myths and mysteries.
Right? I like the way the Corvair looks.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really do. I think there's something just really cool about it. I think that maybe, you know, that'd be great to do an episode on the Corvair.
Yeah. Oh, I think so, too. Here's one of his myths. He says, myth, the Corvair rolls over. Not true. And he says, myth, Ralph Nader killed the Corvair. And he says, not true. His book kept it in production for 3 years longer than planned.
Yeah.
He goes to a
mystery. Any publicity is good publicity, right?
That's what they say, right? Yeah. And then mystery. He ends on a mystery. What happened to the last Corvair? Number 6,000 of the 1969 model year has never been seen again after being photographed on the final day of production.
Ooh, I love mysteries like that. You know what? I bet that's in somebody, like some GM exec's garage somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Probably there, yeah. I mean, like, you hear tale of that. You know, like the executive, the CEO at the time, took it home, put it in the garage, put a cover on it, and never drove it a day.
Or somewhere in the depths of his parking garage, Jay Leno is just quietly detailing the last Corvair.
Possibly. Waiting to bring out the $20 million Corvair.
Well, thanks for writing to us, Joel, and everybody, you know, thanks for listening.
I'm excited about this because
we're going to cover it.
We're going to do the Corvair. I want to do a Corvair show.
All right, so you heard it here first, hopefully. We are going to do a Corvair show. In the meantime, let us know what you would like to hear more of. You can find us on Facebook, drop us a line on Twitter, and we love email. Write to us at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.